Might as well run the. Now we have people like chiming in the live chat. We might as well officially start this. Let me hit this intro and we'll get right into it. So, hey everyone, happy Thursday for a change. Due to various reasons, I'm having this a day earlier and a couple hours earlier, but it's all right. I'm joined by the one and only Spades, as I'll refer to you as now. How's it going, man?
It's going, man.
Well, first, before we get into the rest of the stuff, a shill. So, you have a YouTube channel, and what's it called?
So, I don't have enough subscribers yet for me to actually have a username. Mm-hmm. So, it's just Spades Invest. If you type it in, it'll most likely pop up. But I don't have an actual link just yet. I need to keep working. So,
that's fine. But Spades Invest is what it's called. So, you just look that up. I don't think there's any other Spades Invests out there. So, you should have kind of free reign of that. So, also, I should point out, you should like, comment, share, subscribe on this channel too, because, you know, why not? If you can see on the screen there, cointr.ee/thedesertlinks is my coin tree, which is linked to the live chat, and I can pop it out. So if you want to leave a super chat, that's how you get it done. And you can also leave a hyper chat, as they call them, on Odyssey if you're watching there. And you can drop with like credits on Odyssey, or they have a fiat thing too, but I haven't enabled any fiat stuff because, you know, I only use crypto, and I haven't found a way. Well, I haven't, not that I haven't found it, I haven't connected a way or set up a way to receive fiat, and it ends up as crypto on my end. So right now, crypto only. Sorry, guys. I kind of practice what I preach. So all that being said, let's get into the news. First off, did you see ThorChain's launch its synthetics or synths? Have you seen that?
I did, yeah. I missed it when it first initially launched, but now I have. Yeah, I'm up to date.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead. So I'm sorry.
Let me just give the quick breakdown of synths as I understand them. So, this is all very very, you know, technical to some people, but whatever. So ThorChain is a decentralized DEX. Decentralized exchange and automatic market maker with like liquidity and all that kind of cool stuff, and basically lets you swap any asset they support for any other asset they support without, you know, trustlessly and without getting like weird representations of it. Like I can take Bitcoin on chain, swap it for Dogecoin on chain, and just whoop, there you go. And which is pretty huge. Now what synthetics are is, and I'm actually not going to go into like the pool, how the pool stuff works, like how the pool representations work, because that's pretty complicated. But basically, it allows you to mint that exact like representation of those things. So what that really does in the short term is it means that, so if I get like a S Bitcoin instead of like a synthetic Bitcoin instead of like a real Bitcoin, it's backed by actual Bitcoin, but you can trade it back and forth much easier. You don't have to wait for Bitcoin's notoriously long confirmation times or, you know, relatively high fees. It's not that bad these days. And especially Ethereum, because holy crap, like Ethereum is usually one of the top three or top two most traded tokens on ThorChain. And that means like every time I want to swap Ethereum for Bitcoin, it's just like $15 or something if I'm doing well, I think. And so now yeah, so now if I get a synthetic Ethereum and synthetic Bitcoin, I actually have those. I can swap them for each other or for whatever else, and it happens really quick, and it's cheap. So, I don't know. Do you trade much?
I do. I was big into the stock market. I traded that for a few years, and I was not like anything crazy, not individual stocks. Mm-hmm. I just traded the SPY options, and then I moved over to crypto, and so this whole synthetic, you know, release is actually huge for traders because obviously they can trade in and out quickly and they don't have those high fees. And it's, you know, it's collateralized. So it's linked, you know, to an actual Bitcoin, as you said, or an actual Ethereum. So you're not literally, it's only a benefit in my eyes for traders to be able to trade and do that with Thorchain. So, you know, I don't trade crypto very much anymore. I'm just steady investing now. I've done that. I don't really like it's trading in my eyes is really emotional. So you can, it can really affect your emotional well-being. If you're, if you can't control your emotions and you let it get the best of you, it can really affect how you're doing in your everyday life and your mood. So I try not to trade anymore because I like to, you know, see what coins like Dash that I really like and what projects, and I like to invest and hold. And then you actually, speaking of that, got me into staking. I actually saw you talk about not too long ago staking stable coins. So that was one of the things that, you know, I'm actually big into now, especially if there is a bear market, not saying there is, but when there is a bear market, because I'm sure there will be sometime in the future. But staking, you brought up staking stable coins. And so I've actually been big into that, moving more funds into that. But now with, you know, synthetic shares or not shares, synthetic coins in crypto and Thorchain, I think this is going to be allowing more traders and more institutions to move in who actually do trade these assets and do trade. Because I mean, I have friends that work for Citibank and all these, and they're making these new crypto divisions inside the banks. My mother works for American Century Investments. My girlfriend's father works for Citibank. And so they're all creating these crypto departments, crypto sections inside their banks and inside their investment firms. And these people are strictly trading and investing crypto assets. So this is going to allow like kind of the foot into the door for those traders to step in and, you know, create more jobs for crypto traders and investors.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing is like, it's kind of bringing an exchange, like a centralized exchange type feel or a capability to a completely decentralized platform. And so people are able to go in and out of that stuff. Now, it's just like for non-traders, I think that the idea of a synthetic is, who cares, really? It's just like, well, I want the real thing, which you still can do. So it's like, why add a fake function now and have the real one? But it's the basis for Thor-fi, as they call it, like DeFi, but Thor-DeFi. And they're building a whole bunch of different cool things on top of that base foundation of synthetics. The big one that I'm probably most excited for a personal, you know, personally as like a potential future customer or user of that is Thor Savings, where you'll be able to get a regular savings account kind of income off of any of the assets. And you can kind of do something similar with liquidity providing today, but it's a little different because if I put like a Bitcoin into the Bitcoin pool, it gets split half into Rune, the native Rune token. And then if Rune takes a big dump, then my Bitcoin gets sold for or gets rebalanced to Rune. And then I, you know, don't necessarily make as well. Obviously, the fees that come into the pool, I get, you know, percentage of, you know, relative to that. But like, it could be profitable. It could also not be profitable. And for example, I provide liquidity in small amounts to a few different coins since about the summer. Unfortunately, the Ethereum that I put in was right when Thorchain was down for a couple months, or at least the Ethereum was after a hack, so I didn't get any fees from that. And then Ethereum went to the moon, so I lost like a ton of money relatively. It was only a few hundred bucks, right? But I lost percentage-wise huge. It's almost a year later, and it's still like not near whole. But you know, you can lose money on this kind of stuff, or lose whatever you had. Like, what the hell? I deposited Bitcoin, and I have half as much Bitcoin now, or like, you know, I have like 80-90% as much, or I just would have held it. But with a savings account, with Thor Savings, you'd be able to just get the exact Bitcoin you got out back plus whatever interest. Let's just say it's like a 5%, right? So let's say you have a 5% interest on Bitcoin. Then you have like, you know, was it 1.05 Bitcoin at the end of the year? Whereas if you provided liquidity, you could have a lot more than that. But you could also have less than that, and then there's, you know, there's just all this stuff. So I'm most excited about that, but they're also going to start adding loans and things like that on top of it, like collateralized loans, including self-repaying loans, where let's just say you put one Bitcoin in, You take a loan out on that, and you never have to repay the loan because over time, the liquidity that they use for the loan, it pays itself off over time. Which, if they're able to do that right, which, you know, I don't think there's a plan for exactly when they're going to do this, but once, if they manage to do that right, you could get an under-collateralized loan. So let's just say you get like, you put like 50 grand a Bitcoin, like one, or let's just say you put one Bitcoin in, get 100 grand loan out, or 100 grand stable coin, whatever the hell. And then you're under-collateralized, but they've calculated that over a certain period of time, it'll make, it'll be whole again or whatever, and the liquidity providers are willing to take that risk. And then there you go. You can just give an under-collateralized loan, and, you know, if the price goes down or whatever, you just can't get your money back for longer. But you still don't lose it. It's just stuck there until it pays its debt off, and then you just can get it back off. So that would be cool, because at that point, you start to be able to get into stuff like, you know, buying houses and things that you, like right now, you have to have literally the money up front for it. You either sell all your Bitcoin or whatever to buy a house, or you take all your Bitcoin and get, like, you have to be a baller. You have a ton of Bitcoin, like 600 grand worth of Bitcoin, to get like a 400 grand loan for the house. And if it dips, then you lose all your Bitcoin, you know, and you still have to pay that off. Whereas in this case, maybe you get like 100 grand in Bitcoin, and then you can just buy the house, and then you just don't move the Bitcoin for a while, and then eventually just get it back, you know? So that kind of stuff I'm like really excited for, but it's not a thing quite yet, you know?
Yeah, I've seen so many. I mean, Celsius is another one. I'm not sure if you're too familiar with Celsius.
Yeah.
But they're also
not super, but yeah, I know about them.
Yeah. They're launching a, they have a loan program, but it's, Celsius is centralized right now, so you're not, you don't own your keys. So whenever you put money on Celsius, they're lending your coins, or your, yeah, you're, they're lending your coins out to, you know, whoever and whatnot. And so you don't actually own it, but they're actually releasing a DeFi exchange, and they're trying to do the same thing. They're not as, you know, as advanced as Thor. I want to say Thor is a little bit ahead of the curve right now. But there are more and more companies I see are just moving towards DeFi exchanges. And I think this is huge. I'm not sure if I saw when ThorChain's supposed to release this to mainnet, but I may have missed it.
So Synths are live now.
They're live now. Okay.
As of yesterday, I think, in a very limited capacity. I think they're, as far as a percentage of the pool size, like how much could be minted. But they are live now. You can trade them, but none of the Thor Phi stuff, none of that is out yet as far as I know.
Okay. Yeah. I just see more and more companies and businesses doing that. And I think that's a good thing for crypto in general, is having a decentralized, DeFi like platform and departments that actually focus on, you know, because with the loan thing, I think that's huge. I mean, I personally want to purchase a house with crypto in the future. I want to make that happen. That's like a lifetime goal for me. And I think Dash is moving towards that as well, being able to spend it. I mean, we had the MasterCard program. I don't want to change topics too much here, but we had the MasterCard program that can spend it anywhere MasterCard's accepted in the United States. So that's a huge jump in Dash, for, in my opinion, another great reason. But we still can't, there's a $1,000 limit. So that's the, you know, the trade-off that we have right now. And I want to eventually be able to spend, you know, and make a purchase on a house with cryptocurrency. And I think the way that, you know, Synths are a step in the right direction. And especially with ThorChain doing all this and creating a decentralized finance where you can actually take out loans, I think that's huge. And I want to see it progress. And I think it only is going to progress in the future. It's going to get bigger, better, and hopefully outpace any centralized finance that we have currently.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I got a super chat from Anonymous. Thanks for the dash. Says, dash away from financial censorship. Hashtag dash direct. So as you mentioned, people who watch this channel know pretty well, but I'm just going to hit it up anyway. Dash Direct is an app that's available in the US right now that basically lets you spend crypto, specifically Dash, anywhere. You can, there's hundreds of thousands of retailers that will give you a discount, like a 3-5% or whatever, by spending with Dash. But you can also spend it anywhere else via this really cool crypto MasterCard program that doesn't require your ID and doesn't require you to ever relinquish control of your funds except for the exact amount you buy. So like, for example, this happens. I frequently get coffee at the place around the corner that doesn't take Dash directly or any crypto directly, even though the baristas are starting to take them as tips in their own wallets, which is fun. But I just have to go, okay, what's the cost? 568. And I buy 568 worth of credit with Dash, and then I immediately put that in and just spend it. So it's exposed to fiat slash out of keys I control for 5 seconds or however long it takes me to put it in and spend it. And that's really huge. Right now it's, you have to key in the number. So it's mostly for online purchases, but in the very near future, they will have either a physical card that again is not tied to your name or your real identity at all, or an NFC where you can scan it with your phone, you just tap and pay with your phone, or both. And by the card, the physical card will have NFC capabilities too. So that I'm super excited because one app you get to just live on crypto without any of this KYC nonsense, without relinquishing control over your funds for a moment longer than it needs to. So that's stuff I'm really excited about. Also, while I'm at it, even though I didn't get a super chat or whatever today, shout out to the Nudge, who's been traveling around South America and stuff like that on crypto and has been doing some videos. He made a cool video the other day with Ernesto Contreras of the Dash Core team while in Mexico. And so, yeah, he's in the YouTube live chat right now chatting it up. But yeah, I just want to give it a shout out.
I actually had a question I for you. Do you know if Dash, the Dash MasterCard, is it able to go to the out like your Apple Wallet now, or is that a later feature coming out? I haven't tried it, so I haven't really. I've tried the Dash MasterCard, but I haven't tried to see if I can link it to my Apple Wallet yet. So I'm not sure if that's a feature yet.
I don't think it's possible yet. I think they're working on
Okay.
that's the NFC thing. As far as I'm aware, the way they were going to do that is be able to put the card, link it into Apple Wallet, and then like Google Pay or Samsung Pay or whatever the Android version was. And they're still trying to do that, except for the Android version. I think they kind of gave up or had issues with that. So they're just building an NFC capability in the actual app itself for Android. And so
Okay.
all that's taken time and stuff. It seems like the physical card's going to be actually be easier to do than all this stuff. So that's kind of what we're hoping for. It would be nice to have this globally, but then you have to deal with like I don't know what the prepaid card, gift card type laws are like in other countries and stuff. It might be more difficult, but that's why we have to
Yeah.
try to usher in mass adoption quicker than that, so we can just do that everywhere.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the NFC thing is going to be a huge step. I feel like that is, I mean, people are lazy. I'll be the first to admit I'm lazy. I don't want to, and I think that's what makes Dash great, is I don't want to have to fumble on my phone to try to pay for something and go out of my way and do a bunch of crazy stuff. And Dash with a MasterCard, and especially when the hard copy comes out and we can actually get that is going to be huge with the NFC. I mean, you won't ever actually have to use your regular cards unless you're making a purchase over $1,000, which I personally don't walk around spending $1,000 a day. So if someone else is doing that, let us know. I mean, what you're doing for work, because I'm interested. But
Hey.
yeah, I think that's going to be huge. People are lazy. I'm lazy. And the easier it is, the better, in my opinion. And Dash is probably the easiest crypto to spend in my eyes, with the Dash Direct and the Dash MasterCard. So that's just where I stand on the subject.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think that then you can kind of close the loop and basically spend only crypto on everything. There's a few things that like one of the most annoying things throughout my years of trying to do this has been bills, specific like electricity, heat, all that kind of stuff in the US. Of course, in Canada, there's crypto bill pay systems. In Australia, in Europe, there's just not here. It's just annoying here. With this card, I mean, I'm not going to spend more than 1,000 a month on an electricity bill anyway. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. So, or 1,000 in a chunk. So that works for all that stuff. It just, rent is the one, like, or rent or mortgage or whatever that big ticket item is, or buying a new car, or, you know, I mean, do you really have, like, those are the things that are still, you know, you might have to do a KYC type thing for some of those, or, you know, if you're renting from, like, one of the many renters who will take crypto, which seems like, it seems like it's a lot easier to get people to do that, not only these days, but just because it's like a big item and it's easier for people to deal with like an annoying new payment system like once a month for this one person or something, rather than a coffee shop where you just like constantly hit up with like, oh, I don't know how to do it, I got to train the staff, all this kind of stuff. So there's a, like, to live, the entire financial system is rigged so that you basically have to get someone else's permission to do everything. And right now you can basically not do that for 90% of things. And like, you can still buy a house cash / crypto. I mean, there's a few real estate agents in here in New Hampshire who will negotiate crypto cash purchases. I mean, crypto house purchases, but those are, or the down payment in that, and then the rest is financing and stuff. Like, there's been quite a few houses, well, at least like a half dozen, I think, in New Hampshire that I know of that have been sold for crypto. You can do that. It just, the things that require like payments, like a car, like a, you know, that you're not, you can buy a used or new car directly with crypto. It's just like the car payments thing, the house payments thing, you know, student loans, all that kind of stuff. That stuff you can't really do crypto on yet, but give it a few years.
Right. Well, I want FAFSA to. Mm-hmm. I know this is a long shot, but
yeah,
I think it would be amazing to have FAFSA be able to accept crypto and give out, you know, pay for tuition in crypto that way. I'm not, obviously, I'm not a big fan of student loans. I think, you know, my personal opinion on it is they're predatory in nature. Yeah. So they try to take advantage of kids, and mm-hmm. I don't want to say kids, but they're 18, 20 years old, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're predatory. And that's why I went to in the Marine Corps and I did all that, is I didn't want to spend the big budget on going to school, because I knew I wanted to go to school, but I didn't want to pay for it. So that's mm-hmm. why I joined the military. So mm-hmm. I think it would be, I mean, amazing to have FAFSA give out loans and pay for student, student tuition, and even, you know, pay back. If you could pay back those loans with crypto, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, can you pay your student loans? Cause I never had any student loans. Can you pay them with like a credit card or something?
I'm not too familiar. I don't have any student loans mm-hmm. either, just because the military, but I'm assuming you could. I don't know if there would be any stipulations where you wouldn't be able to do that. To be honest, you'd probably pay less interest with a credit card than you would pay. So I think you could do that. But I don't know the stipulations of what that would be. Yeah. But if you can, then obviously you can pay already with Dash, then, if that's possible.
So I'm pretty sure you could, because back before this MasterCard thingy came out, I was using stuff like BitRefill extensively, still do, but there was this thing, Walmart Pay was a very, very interesting thing where you could get credit, like you could get gift credit with crypto, including Dash, put them into the Walmart Pay app, and then use that to go to the Walmart bill pay station, pay your bills that way. And that worked for a while. And now I think it's like, well, they sandbox the gift credit part out of the bill pay or something. But I know that the Walmart bill pay thingy, which, you know, lets you use cash and stuff. So if you want to sell your crypto for cash and then do that, you could pay like child support or whatever else. I mean, Walmart's like a bank for the, you know, the unbanked in a lot of ways. So
yeah,
I'm pretty sure you could pay your student loans with crypto today, but I just wait for it all to get a little bit smoother. That's kind of what I'm kind of thinking of.
Get the Knicks out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this pump. So a bunch of so-called privacy coins have pumped by a significant amount over the last, you know, day or so. And Dash got a little bit of this, but not as much as the others. Like, what was it? Monero went up by like 24% or something, like 25%. And I'm pretty sure that has a lot to do with sanctions, including Coinbase blocking, which I guess we're talking about Coinbase then. Coinbase basically blocked transfers out to Russian-owned addresses and things. And I don't know if you saw this, but Coinbase also, to a couple of high-profile users, Cullen Talks Crypto is one of those guys, but also Gavin Andreessen, who is Satoshi's heir apparent, got this like letter basically saying that they wanted, in order to continue using his Coinbase account, he needed to provide like personal bank statements for the last few months and stuff like that. Not, it's just like, I don't want to use this to dunk on Coinbase because I don't think Coinbase wants to be doing this, right? But it's just clearly that the financial surveillance and censorship state is just ratcheting up right now, and it's making things tougher for crypto users in particular.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you're an investor in Monero. I'll disclose. I am. Mm-hmm. I am. And the difficulties I've had with exchanges mm-hmm. and buying Monero itself are crazy. I know for Kraken, I can't buy Monero. I'm not sure if, I mean, you can buy it, but, I'm sorry, you can't withdraw it. You can't withdraw it.
Hmm. But they so let you buy it, but they don't let you withdraw it. Is correct, that older for Monero?
I think that's privacy, like in general, any of the coins that are privacy. Maybe Zcash as well, but I'm not sure. I know for Monero, because that's the only privacy-based coin that I'm currently invested in. And I know on Kraken, you cannot withdraw it to an address. You have to convert it to something else and then withdraw it. Mm-hmm. And so everything going on right now, I mean, with Russia, Ukraine, and all these, you know, tightening down, even Coinbase, I went out and I bought two hardware wallets, the Ledgers. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm storing all my privacy-based coins, even Dash. I have Dash on there as well. But I don't like exchanges dictating what you can and can't do. I feel like that's more of what banks do. And they tell you, you know, what you can, what you can't withdraw. And the things, the hoops that I've had to jump through to just buy Monero are ridiculous, in my opinion. And I know in the past, Dash had been removed from a few exchanges. I don't remember if I know the exact ones off the top of the head, but this is whenever it was like initially, you know, Dash was a privacy-based coin. Dash was like removed from exchanges, and I don't like that at all.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. This whole like the whole privacy coin thing, I personally believe, as far as like a regulatory thing, I believe that that's going to be kind of an issue the past in some ways, because first off, they're starting to figure out, they're kind of honing in more on what they want to do, which is, you know, they're starting to implement like CoinJoin stuff into this too. So if you have mix, one thing I'll notice, like if you want to use a service like SwapSpace to just swap your coins, you might get KYC if you try to use a mixed transaction right there. Of course, you can mix it to your wallet and then send it, and then it doesn't pick it up. Like, it's not the upstream. But, like, they started to hone in more on that. I think Gemini does let you withdraw shielded Zcash transactions. Like, and I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to do that because of just the way the regulatory space is going. But that's one reason I'm big into ThorChain, right? Because you don't need approval to do that kind of stuff. You can swap everything, and Dash is coming to ThorChain soon, hopefully. Monero's supposedly on the list as well, a little bit more behind, but that's really the way forward. Is when the future kind of goes there, you kind of go there, and the entire, like, I don't think that centralized exchanges for trading cryptos are going to really be around. I just think that all these big centralized exchanges, such as like the Binance and the Coinbase and the Kraken and the Gemini of the world, are going to migrate to just being a fiat on ramp, and then have like a, for lack of, you know, better example, like a ThorChain interface there too, where you buy your stuff and then it's just like when you want to exit I bought my coins here kind of platform. Then you have to do all this like KYC and like, oh, this control, please confirm that this wallet is yours and all this kind of shit. And then you just start trading on the actual decentralized stuff. And it's going to become trivial. Like, so there's an exchange right now, which based on what I've heard from some insiders, I don't know if it's going to last a long time, but it still exists. It works, called Incognito. And it's basically similar to ThorChain, like something similar to that, except it wraps all your assets in a Monero based kind of privacy token, so you can trade privately, right? And it supports Dash and Monero today, so you can swap your Dash for Monero and vice versa today on, you know, a DEX that works pretty well. I mean, sometimes it's slow, sometimes there's liquidity issues because it's like new and stuff, but. It's just, that's the way things are going to go. There's supply and demand. People have demand for privacy, especially when they start seeing their transactions traced. They just wanted to send some crypto to some like Ukrainian fund because, you know, someone posted it and made a sob story and they're like, all right, I want to help. And they don't want to get blacklisted or like blocked or whatever. Right. That's a little weird. So people want privacy and they will get privacy. They'll get it however they can.
Right. And we saw kind of the beginnings of that with what was going on in Canada with the truckers. Mm-hmm. And we saw, I don't know if you were familiar with the story of a single mother in Canada send like 50 yes, bucks worth of crypto, or I don't know exactly the amount, but they shut down her bank account. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I cannot agree with that whatsoever. I just, from a moral standpoint, I don't think the government or anyone should have a say and what I do with my money, unless it's to cause harm to another individual, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't know if you've seen the bounty that's currently out on Monero from mm-hmm. the IRS to crack that. How do you feel about, I guess, that? Because I don't think the IRS should be trying to pay anyone to crack it. I know they want to, so that way, you know, people aren't going to evade taxes and do whatever. But I don't know how I feel about the IRS putting a bounty out on cryptocurrencies or Monero, you know, to try to crack it so that way they can get, you know, information or learn more about it. You know, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. I have a couple theories. So first off, I don't believe in involuntary taxation to begin with. I think that everyone should pay for what they sign up for. And if they don't want to sign up for something, they don't pay for it. And I don't believe in this whole, like, you have no control over your money. Even if you have to pay things, I think that you should pay those. Or if you don't pay those, then there's other consequences outside of things. But it's not like you have money that you don't, that's kind of yours, but you don't control. Like, I don't believe that in that at all. So we'll just start out with that. As far as the bounty, I'm wondering if that is a, here's the thing, what I know, you know, secondhand and stuff, obviously, from the IRS, is they don't really have the bandwidth to shake down and collect from anywhere near everyone. You know, they just, their system is horrendously complicated. They make everyone sort of guess what they owe and make a case to them that, hey, look, does this look good? And they're like, yeah, I guess, you know, like, and if not, you kind of like get audited, you know, which is, it's a terrible system. It's so, but it, on their end too, it's not just terrible for the end user. It's terrible for them having to hire all these people and stuff, and they're understaffed. So there's no way they can shake down all crypto transactions or even a vast majority, even a slight majority, even, you know, they got to shake the tree and see what comes out of it. And it's like everything, it's a business. Like, anything, when anyone says like, oh, you have 100% collection rate, it's just not true. Like, if you owe money, you never get paid 100%. So it's just a shrewd business of how much can you get to pay. So all that to say, I believe when they say they got a bounty out for it, they're probably, it's mostly like a PR thing. They're trying to get people to be like, oh shit, I got some of that. There's a bounty that's going to crack it. Oh, I better pay now. And, you know, just that's probably mostly what it is. It could just be honest to goodness one too, right? They want to like try to crack it. But The honest truth, though, is to a certain extent, we already kind of know how to crack Monero in some ways. Because all the transactions are, it uses the decoy model rather than complete, you know, encryption. And so there's been historical ways of weeding through that. Of course, like the biggest thing is not on-chain at all. It's just someone bought, you know, let's say a few grand in Bitcoin. Then they swap it for Monero. They might not see the Monero come out the other end, but they see that they did it. And then they pose as like a darknet honeypot somewhere and see someone bought this much, you know, in Monero there, and they can just link the dots from, you know, the off-chain data kind of thing. Or, you know, like there's ways of doing that relatively, I would say maybe even easily. As far as like the chain itself, there are some things you can do. Like there have historically been some bugs, such as of all the decoys put out, there was like a 50% chance for a while, I believe. Again, this is all, you know, this is glossing over a lot of stuff and a lot of history, right, over the years. But there's like a 50% chance that the first decoy was the correct one. So they could kind of guess, okay, that's probably it. And then also with all the forks, every time you do a hard fork, you split off and you claim your forked coins, because there were a few Monero forks when they changed the hashing algorithm. If you claimed your coins, you de-anonymize yourself on the main chain as well. And then if enough people did that, the pool of decoys in the entire Monero ecosystem would get harmed to such an extent where the privacy would be not very good. Now, how many people actually claim their keys? I'm not sure. But then more recently, as far, there was some bug where if you received Monero and rapidly respent it, there was a very high likelihood that the first decoy, I believe, or last, I don't remember which one, was the correct one. So you'd have to like wait a few minutes to be sure. So there's been all these little things that have popped up over the years. I'm sure there's plenty more that no one's talked about, you know, that are just kind of right, sitting in there. And so I'm guessing Monero's probably been cracked already. That doesn't mean everyone trying to look can see it. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's 100%. I would probably personally trust something more like Zcash if I could on that kind of thing. But even then, even if your blockchain imprint is like zero, all your other data, as soon as you use a KYC service, that
then it's linked, yeah.
That really not only puts a spotlight on you, so it makes people look as opposed to just stuff flying around, but then you have that data point. I bought this much and I withdrew it at this time. And then you have to be much more careful about, like, if you buy a bunch of Zcash and you withdraw it on like a Friday, and then on a Saturday close to where you're at, someone buys a car with Zcash, you know, at the exact amount, you know, people could figure it out. So you'll have to be like, oh, I withdraw this, I withdraw that. I'm going to wait a little while to, you know, throw them off. I'm not, like, all the data you shed out compromises your privacy. It just, I would encourage people to, if they're afraid of being busted, you know, like, understand your risk assessment, understand the risks that you're posing. You're not telling anyone what to do, but just try to sleep well at night. Find a way so you could sleep well at night. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But I guess before we transition to the Tether CTO, do you lump Dash into, say, a privacy-based, I don't want to say based, a privacy coin, or do you lump Dash with CoinJoin as like a privacy feature? Like, if someone were to ask you, hey, is Dash a privacy coin? Would you say yes, or would you say, Dash is not a privacy coin, it just has a privacy feature?
I'll give two answers to this. One is short and one is very long-winded. And accurate, but the short one is I'd probably say it's a privacy feature. And now let's roll, because then Bitcoin Cash would be a privacy coin too, although not as good, but still it can mix, and Bitcoin can as well. But to roll back, I don't think the term privacy coin means anything. It's something made up by the media, and that's kind of caused a lot of the delistings and stuff. It just oh, I saw some article that said privacy coin, so we're going to delist it. No actual research. First off, I think eventually every project is going to have privacy features or no one's going to want to use it. And so it's kind of like a, you know, a security coin. Well, what, do you want like an insecure blockchain, you dummy? Like, yeah. Everyone's going to want that eventually. And so right. that's number one. I don't like the term for that reason. But the other thing is there's honestly varying levels of privacy based on whatever you're going for. And I mean, obviously the very lowest level is anything that's KYC, right? Any like government run, like a CBDC or something like that. That would definitely be like zero. A one would be something like Ethereum. That's an account-based thing where one address, every time you send and receive from the address, you could just look at the address and see everything. They don't necessarily know who's behind that address, but it's super transparent. And if you sell someone an NFT, they can see all the money you made from all the other NFTs to that address. And it's pretty crazy. I don't understand how anyone just like uses that for major amounts of money and stuff. Yeah. You know, it's really crazy. The next level would be a UTXO model, like, you know, a Bitcoin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, Dash, anything on a base level, just that gets a new address every time you send. Because you can have actually really good, pretty good privacy if you're really careful on how you use those. If you never reuse addresses, if you are careful with like, I pay you and I get change back to this address. I pay someone else, I get change back to this address. Now I have money in these two, and I make sure that I only spend from one address at a time whenever I'm sending them. Like I don't take coins from here and here, combine them in the same payment. Because if I do that, then I compromise my privacy. There's right. little ways you can have that without any special tools, really. Now, the next level, of course, would be CoinJoin, which not all CoinJoins are created equal. I just chatted with the Samurai Wallet developers not too long ago, and they found a critical error in the Wasabi wallet, a competitor, to be frank. But in 2019, they figured out that they had some address reuse problems, which, again, once you mix all your money together, if you combine any two of those, all of a sudden you start to combine everything. And so all the major high-profile hacks, was it the Twitter hacker, the Bitfinex hacker, and the the DAO hacker, they all got busted recently. They all used Wasabi Wallet, and they all got busted. So obviously that's better than that. Then you have stuff like, you know, Cash Shuffle, Cash Fusion on Bitcoin Cash. And the Dash mixing, I think, is probably the most robust mixing because you don't have change addresses at all, whereas some of these other ones do. And they, like, in fact, what the Samurai Wallet is working on, I don't know if they've finished it yet, but you have, like, change address, like, change from payments, and you can't touch those. It gets, like, toxic change. Otherwise, you'll compromise your privacy. They're having ways of doing atomic swaps to Monero and then back out of Monero to Bitcoin. So it kind of severs that link that between that. But so with Dash, those fees just get, like, burned anyway. They get spent as fees. So with Dash, it's if you do everything correctly, or with, let's say, Dash or another high-level mixer, you can't really tell where the money's coming from when you receive it. You can still see, if you give post an address and someone sends an anonymous payment there, you can't really tell where it came from, but you can tell that now this address has it. And then if you just send it on the way, and of course, there's still the same stuff. Whereas I have like 100 Dash, I mix it, and then 100 Dash shows up somewhere else on the blockchain that comes from a big swarm of inputs. It's really easy to kind of figure for anyone analyzing the chain to see what's going on. And then probably the next level beyond that, I would put like something like Monero, which has a kind of automated mixer type. Again, being although technically competent people are probably losing their mind right now because of the simple terms I'm using, but like an automated mixer thing. But then they have stuff like stealth addresses where you can't really tell how much is in a specific address when you, even if you can, like if I send to an address, I can't tell how much what the balance of that address is, and a few other things that just make it more private, but still you know advanced actors can probably figure it out. And finally, you have something like Zcash, probably like Furo, they use Lelantis and stuff like that, that's just basically if done correctly, there's almost no data on the blockchain at all to gather from. But then, even then, you still have that real world, that off-chain data, right? The real world data you have to make sure you're you're being careful to hide. And like I had some people recommend just buy it on Gemini and then it's all dark and stuff. I'm like, oh boy. Like, yeah, you can, but if the government sees you bought 100 grand of Zcash in a year and then Zcash doubled in price and they see on your returns your income is not enough to justify some of these bigger purchases, you're going to get busted. You know, it doesn't like it just now, of course, if you, you know, do a coding job under an anonymous whatever and you get paid in Zcash and then you have a ton of, you know, get a bunch of Zcash and you buy stuff that doesn't require KYC or like doesn't log customer name and information and stuff for it, or, you know, then you're probably like, there's no way you could trace that or something. Probably. Again, do your own research, guys.
Yeah. I agree with everything you basically said. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great explanation. I like how you have it in tiers, kind of mm-hmm. more secure, or excuse me, of less secure to more secure in that kind of mm-hmm. breakdown. I don't really have any much else on the topic. I would agree. I'd say Dash is has a privacy feature. It's not a privacy coin. Mm-hmm. And I think that whole stigma was created by the media to kind of lump things that they didn't understand together.
Yeah. It was just an easy thing to do. Now, one thing I would kind of add to all that, the encrypted stuff, there's a lot of great advantages of having a public blockchain. And one thing is you can't, it's harder to steal money and stuff. But also, with a public blockchain, you know how many coins are in circulation at all times. Whereas you could have an inflation bug. There have been inflation bugs on, for example, Bitcoin in the past, but they get caught. The problem is every single encrypted privacy coin that you don't have a publicly viewable blockchain, you don't really know how scarce it is. You probably, but there could have been an inflation bug. There could be 80 million times the supply of Zcash out there. You just don't know. And for that reason, and I might be talking out my ass, but I'm going to do it anyway until someone smarter than me corrects me. I think probably the best approach, which I think is what Horizon is doing, is which used to be called Zencash, that has like a basically Dashified Zcash is how they called it. But they took encrypted privacy off the main chain and instead do encrypted side chains. So you'd lock up some Zen and then mint PZen or whatever the hell it is, and then do that, and then you can just do all your private transactions, and then it just comes out. So the base monetary layer is always auditable. And so I do think at some point, because I mix all the time on Dash, it's a pain in the ass. I would rather have an encrypted sidechain on Dash that just, at the very least, allows you to go like in and out and like have like history-less layer one coins or whatever. But or even better yet, just transact all in the P layer and then just zoop back out to the auditable layer at some point.
Right. I don't know. You want to jump to the next one?
Yep.
The CBDCs.
Yes. CBDCs will not impact private stablecoin market, says Tether CTO, which of course they would say that. But basically just say there's always going to be what do you say here? Let me look at this specific tweet. CBDCs will use a private blockchain in most modern cost control tech infrastructures. They won't be issued on your favorite chain. Private stablecoins will continue to serve that use case. So what's your hot take on this? Because there's a lot of layers to this.
Well, first of all, I don't like Tether at all. I don't like their CTO, but that's besides the point.
They're horrendous. I'm never going to touch this stuff.
Yeah. But I think, personally, I mean, the more I've read about CBDCs, I've saw the, I'm not sure who, which Fed, it may be the Boston Fed, but they have a coin, a coin that can handle, I think, 21 million transactions right now. I don't know if you saw that article, but the Fed already has a centralized coin, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have most of the money now is digitalized anyway, so it's just appears on the bank account when they want it, or it appears on the balance sheet when they want it for the Federal Reserve, and when they don't want it, it disappears or whatever. They create coins, and they already have that. So I don't personally like stable coins, but I think there is a place for them to coincide with a CBDC as well. I don't ever want to transact in a CBDC. I don't want the government to ever know about it, you know, ever know any of my finances, or I don't think it's any of their business. But I think in the next few years, we're going to see a lot more CBDCs. And I think there is a place for stable coins, maybe not Tether. I want to get rid of Tether, but maybe some other ones. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I've typically historically been a stablecoin minimalist, because why would you want something pegged to the constantly inflating currency that crypto is created in order to replace? That's right. Just kind of my thing. Now, that's kind of like the childlike, you know, rah-rah answer. In the real world, people do, like, they don't want to just ride the ups and downs of the market. They want to hedge in and out at different points. And so the thing is, CBDCs are just going to be like a digital dollar. And they can't be used with DeFi, really, because this will very much depend on how they're implemented. But because they are not going to be permissionless if they're run by a central bank. And you need that permissionlessness in order to interact with DeFi. So they're kind of it's basically just going to be, it's going to be the same setup right now as you got your Coinbase or whatever, you got to buy, do your ID and stuff and buy cryptos. I think it'll just be more efficient. I think CBDCs will make fiat more efficient to use across different payment rails, because it'll be just one rail. And I think it'll make it much easier to surveil than even it already is, rather than have to call up all these different banks and censor. The Federal Reserve headquarters will just see everyone's money and just block your payments, like, right there, which is pretty horrendous. Right. It's even worse than what we got right now.
It's awful.
But so as far as stable coins, they're largely a trader's tool. And they're, even if CBDCs were completely permissionless for some weird reason, you'd still have coins because you need them on the DeFi networks that are being run, right? You need, if you're on Ethereum, you need a USDC or something that's on a token representation of a, you know, a fiat value on that chain in order to do all that DeFi stuff. Even on ThorChain, where you can swap back and forth, if you want to just have an interest-bearing account, like on a fiat value, you'd have to, you can't just provide liquidity, because then it gets split half into Rune. You'd have to get a synthetic, which is like a token of, you know, tokenized representation of that, and then there you go. You'd still have these like stablecoin tokens and stuff to be able to trade back and forth. And so for that reason, there will always be a million different freaking stablecoins going around. What I like about the whole synthetic model, because the way synthetics work, as you know, we mentioned in the early part of this show, which I didn't get into, but maybe I need to. So if you have a pool of 50% Bitcoin, 50% Rune, you get a representation of, you put in some Bitcoin, get the Bitcoin synthetic of that just represents that exact value. And it's backed by the 50-50 thing. So there's an interesting point pointed out that a lot of these backed stable, these one-to-one backed coins or whatever on other networks end up in a weird situation where the total value of minted assets on a network becomes higher than the base protocol itself. So let's just say you have like in the future, yeah, I got a 1 trillion market cap for Ethereum, you know, not that unlikely within a few years. I don't know. But say you have 1 trillion. What happens if you have 10 trillion worth of stable coins and other tokens on the Ethereum network, just like out there? Then at that point, it becomes, there's incentives to actually attack the network to take away all those coins. Like if you have like wrapped assets and stuff, right? So like if there's someone puts 10 million of USD and mints a USD coin or whatever, a Tether or something, then there's incentive to destroy the Ethereum network so you get access to those 10 million or 10 trillion rather, because it's worth more than whatever. But by having a 50-50 pool like synthetics, you'll never it's never going to be worth it to attack the network, because you're always going to have at least so much exposure to the base network token. But what I like to have happen is a synthetic based on like a synthetic that's not just based on the value of one thing, but like a cross asset composite synthetic kind of thing. So like I would like to just have a synthetic that's based on the price of, let's just say, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Rune, Dash, and UST, or the Terra Luna stablecoin. Just combine all those and make one that's like the average value of all of those things. Because then you have like, you know, baskets and things like that. So like stablecoins eventually, I don't think are going to be fiat only, like fiat values only. I think that you'll have like a gold stablecoin, as long as it can pull like an Oracle. Yeah, as long as an Oracle can kind of pull like the gold price according to some of these major exchanges where gold is traded. But like, I would love to have a composite like gold, Bitcoin, and the dollar for like average out those three values as like a stable coin. And then that's right. like a real stable coin kind of, for example.
Right. And I think the other, like, only other role I can think of for stable coins to still exist is the staking. So, I mean, we can already stake on ThorChain, you can stake all these and provide liquidity and do all these other things. But I think people see that as a more risky kind of staking, because you're not really sure what the price is going to do, you know, within the next year. It could go up, you can make a bunch of money from staking, or it could go down. But with stable coins, you kind of have a general, I mean, you have an idea of what you'll be making a year through APY or through staking these stable coins, just because they are stable. Even if inflation is running rampant, they are stable enough to stake long term. So you have an idea, even for the people who don't want to take on that extra risk of, say, staking, staking Ethereum, right, in the future. They don't want to take on that risk of Ethereum price dumping. So they're going to put money in a stable coin and stake that way. That's the only other way I can see. I still think stable coins are going to be around for 100%, but I think those two, what you said, and then the staking, are the only two reasons why I would ever touch stable coins, is to trade it out and to stake for in case of a bear market or something like that.
Yeah, and that's something we always have to keep in mind when you come up with stable coins, is the US dollar stablecoin is going down by like around 8% a year, although I think the real figures are probably a lot more than that. And so think about the staking APY you have to have in order for that to barely break even. So like, if you have, if you're staking on Anchor with UST and you're getting 20% about, or 19.5% or whatever it is back, that's worth it, right? Because you're making some, but it's still not like crazy money on your money. And I don't know if it's sustainable either, but that's a different subject. But like, you should have your money in something that's actually scarce, and stablecoin's valuation isn't. It's kind of more like a bear market hedge, because like, as I explained, like crypto goes up, down, up, down, up, down, but like up, down in a upward trajectory. And if when it goes up and you somewhere in there, you manage to just put out into some staking stablecoin or whatever, it goes like, then your money goes up, kind of flat, or maybe up really slow up because you're staking, and then up more. And so it just, you're always kind of, it kind of smooths out the big old dips and just kind of increases the curve up if you manage to do it right. So it's a tool for those things, but mostly it's just so you don't have like lean years with like crypto. Like when I first got in, like Bitcoin was, I had like very little of it, of course, but Bitcoin was like $130. And then it went all the way to 1,100 a month or two later. And then it went down to like 198 or something at the lowest. And so it goes like all that up and down. There's lean years and people complaining and stuff. And so, yeah, it's good to not go down as fast as a new speculative asset is dumping, you know?
Right. Yeah, I don't have much to add on that other than what we already spoke about. But I guess just transitioning to the LimeWire, what are your thoughts on that? first of all, I want to say that start off by saying I was huge into LimeWire whenever I was, you know, much younger, but it kind of phased out. There was like the other ones. What was the other big popular one besides LimeWire?
Well, obviously Napster was the first.
Napster. Yeah. Right. So, you know, Napster, LimeWire, and all these other ones, they were like part of my childhood. I just remember going there and downloading MP3s and all kinds of stuff on my MP3 player. So I want to say, LimeWire, I'm glad you're back, but I'm not really big into the whole NFTs. I'm trying to figure out where I stand with NFTs. I think there's a market for them in the future, but the market that they're currently tapping into right now, I don't think that's it. I don't like the whole, I guess, just loosely related to something on the blockchain, right? It's just, and owning a picture, it's not what I see the potential for the NFTs are. But I guess you can piggyback on that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think that NFTs are the start of something massive. And I don't know if they've figured out how to make the dollars make sense, so to speak. It kind of, my understanding, I kind of link it back to the ICO boom of 2017, where Ethereum went to prominence because of ICOs, because people could just raise any money they wanted in a decentralized kind of a way and issue tokens and sell them. And the problem, and be able to raise capital like trustlessly, instantly from anyone around the world, is an absolutely massive innovation. However, the problem is these tokens they issued didn't really do anything. Like, people bought a token, which in the back of their mind they thought was equity in a company, but it was just a token. And so people just did token raises, and they just got free money, basically. They have no obligation to the end user. And sometimes they could, if they formed an official company with official, like, rules that say, oh, these tokens will be used for the, like, there's ways of tying it, but essentially it was like a great concept, but the tokens themselves were dead. They didn't work. They were non-functional. They worked great at raising money, but that's why it kind of went away for a while. And I think the realization of that, of its potential in the actual real world, I believe, has kind of been the DAO, that now everything's a DAO, which is still like, I mean, obviously, like the Dash DAO is like the first DAO, but that was like a whole project as a DAO, right? The entire, you know, currency financial system platform as a DAO, which, you know, I think, but I'm talking about the micro DAOs of today, where someone says, let's just start an Assange DAO, like a DAO to like pay Julian Assange's stuff. And some of that stuff is still pretty rough, but at least now the tokens do something. They have voting power on the mini platform. And same thing with NFTs, right? I have basically no interest in, I have very little interest. I shouldn't say no interest. I have very little interest in NFTs that don't do anything. Like, practically, that just have, this is an NFT, you own it, and this is like the image associated with it. Of course, especially if the image is not stored in a decentralized way, that's absolutely like OpenSea. I don't give a shit. I'm not, I don't care. But NFT, it's a little bit different from the ICOs, because I don't think anyone invested in an ICO just because they wanted to see the project succeed. I think they almost everyone, like 90%, had some expectation of return. And the thing is with NFTs, sure, there's a lot of that. People buy them. They hope they go up in price. But they also might just like the artist and want to support their work, too. So if the if the NFT goes to zero, they might not care because they got this little commemorative thing that said, I supported whoever this is. But that's about as far as it goes now. This whole like NFT for musicians thing, you got to figure out how that's going to work, because what, like they say, like royalties and stuff, like you can sell your song and then every time you resell the song, you get royalties. And like, there is some programmed in right now, right? So for example, if I mint an NFT on the Wax blockchain and I use that NFT, I use that as a proof to get into like a special exclusive Telegram channel or something of like supporters, that instead of this CoinTree janky fucking live chat thing here, it's like, it's, you know, it's like a nice little Telegram channel. People who have the NFT can just write in it, and then someone can resell that, because, and then I get 1% of the resale if it's on like the secondary markets, like Atomic Hub and stuff. And that's programmed in. That's great. Of course, you could just do like off chain. Like if you just find a friend and say, hey, you, I want to sell my Digital Cash Network NFT because I think this channel is crap. It's not going anywhere. And the other guy's, oh, I like it. So then you'll buy it and we'll skip the fee. The problem is, like, you know, you don't, it might harm its ability to be resold in the future because there's not like a clear transition of ownership. There's always the, well, was it stolen? No. Oh, this guy, he's totally my friend. I totally paid him for it. Really? What's the evidence? And it's like, eh. Or you just don't have the same access to like a marketplace of buyers and prices and stuff. So you kind of want the 1% fee is like worthwhile. That's all today now. And that's useful. Just that all these NFTs are like royalties for the song forever. Well, you mean of this commemorative of the song, like not the song, because anyone can still download it on, maybe not LimeWire anymore, but you know, something else, they can still listen to this. And then how do you get royalties from the sales? Some have said that, but you just trust whoever it is to basically take all their proceeds and pay out a certain percentage to the Ethereum or whatever else addresses associated with the NFTs, which I think the SEC is going to come in and say that's an illegal security, you can't do that. And since it is a company, they will just say, all right, sorry, never mind. The NFT is just commemorative, no royalties anymore. And people get pissed off. Like, that's probably how a lot of these early ones are going to go.
Right. I guess, where do you, I mean, everyone, I feel like everyone is actually moving towards NFTs, whether it's like big influencers or, I mean, we saw like Jake Paul and I, you know, I'm not a fan of them, but I see like all these new influencers, and I don't know if you watch like CoffeeZilla or any of these YouTube guys who like pretty much expose, you know, the scammy nature of NFTs and stuff like that. But no. Yeah, he's a good channel. You should shout out to him. But his name's CoffeeZilla. He basically goes into depth of how some of these projects are just ridiculous scams. And yeah. NFT, I feel like, is a breeding ground for that sometimes, where more people want to take advantage of the quick buck, and they see NFTs as like a foot in the door of like, hey, if I just create a collection and I'm a big influencer and whatnot, or I'm an artist, I can, you know, pump out some of this, you know, crap quality JPEGs or whatever and make a quick buck off people. And like I said, I don't believe that's what NFTs are meant to do in the long run. I think like you said, this is the tip of the spear of just the JPEGs and the Bored Apes. This is, you know, the ICOs of, you know, the NFTs right now. So that's what we're seeing. Yeah. I guess, what do you see about that?
I think so too. The thing is, like, the use case, like, the ICO, I mean, the NFT is the ultimate way to sell someone nothing. You know? And so, like that's kind of like a donation, but a donation, you don't sell it. There's just, it's like goodness of your heart kind of thing. Although in my previous life, I worked in nonprofit fundraising. And if you gave a certain donors of a certain level, like a special, like lapel pin or whatever, they give more just to hit that level to be special. So there is still a sales element to that, you know, but with NFTs. So that's the bad part of NFTs is, there you can sell someone nothing. So a lot of people are like, I want to do nothing and get paid for it. And so people are just like hawking their NFT collections, or everyone's got an NFT line just so they can, like, you know, grift off of it, profit off of the new stuff. On the other hand, I think that one of the reasons why, this is my feeling, and I am not a trader, and I have historically had poor, anytime I've tried to predict stuff, I've had a poor track record with that. So take this with a grain of salt. I get this gut feeling that this coming bear market is not going to be that insane. Like, I think that someone like, for example, Naomi Brockwell is hypothesizing that there won't be a bear market because of all these things coming together right now that are going to boost crypto right as the bear market should start. So it's just kind of not going to be one. I don't know if it's going to not be one, but I don't think it's going to be as vicious as the previous ones, just because artists typically, or creators, have typically been in the business of selling nothing. They've typically, well, it depends on what they create. Obviously, physical art is a different thing. But in the digital age, artists have largely done things. They've put their work into for free stuff. And then they've tried to get money somehow back later, which has always been a little hard, right? And so now if they can sell nothing, they can actually monetize the stuff they've already been putting hard work into doing. And that's, I think, evergreen. That's the one, like the NFTs today that suck, they still work for those people. It's still like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm going to be, like, for example, let's just say Beeple, right? Beeple, Mr. Digital Artist, who does all this cool stuff and sold the incredibly expensive NFT and stuff, he still does his dailies, his daily artwork, digital artworks. Every single day he does one. And if he makes an NFT of those, even if, like, you can view it on his Instagram and, you know, whatever, people are still going to buy those without fail, even if it's just a JPEG, because it's his JPEGs, and it's only, like, a few of them that he sells. I guess I don't actually know too much about the way his NFTs work, but I know he does them, and that's just going to sustain. And he wasn't doing that, as far as I know, before NFTs came around. Like, they wasn't doing an other equivalent. So then any other digital artist, like a mini Beeple, let's say, like, not someone who's, like, hugely popular, but someone who's got, like, a basic kind of following of some people who keeps putting out art or keeps putting out articles or keeps putting out something on, you know, then their subscribers or whatever will now probably buy NFTs of their work, even during the bear market, even where they weren't really donating as much beforehand, right? And so,
right,
like, sometimes, like, even on this channel, I accept donations, and I get very few. Historically, I got more in the past, but I've gotten very few just donations. Mostly, they're a message, right? They're like, people want to buy digital space here. Like, there we go. Someone says, talk about Dash Direct. Give me $50. They own this little piece of digital real estate until someone else dips and stuff. So it's still been a trade. Even the donations have been a trade. So I see for creators, NFTs being a thing, like even the crappy NFTs. But once you start programming in interesting stuff, like access to where, like, a platform, like the Telegram channel thing, there's a bot that some dude makes that checks if you have an NFT before letting you into the channel. Okay. But what if the bot, what if it's not Telegram? What if it's some decentralized platform that has that built in, that access built in? If you have an NFT, you get in here. And then, oh, okay, that's, you know, this. Or what if a company, like, let's just say Shapeshift, which is a DAO now, what if Shapeshift decides to issue NFTs? They're like revenue sharing NFTs. Like, if you're this, you get a percentage of all the stuff, and it's programmed into the thing. So they can't just stop honoring it. The only way they could stop honoring it is if they just literally took out their whole, like, made a new DAO from scratch and all that stuff. And so they kind of have to. When that stuff is in, I think that we're going to see another NFT boom, you know, next, let's just say next 4 or 5 years, I think.
Right. I kind of want to go back to what you said. I'm not sure who you mentioned, but talking about the bear market, I think this is just my personal, so take this with a grain of salt. I'm not a financial advisor whatsoever.
Yeah, none of us are. We're on YouTube, for freak's sake. You shouldn't be looking for financial advice here anyway.
I agree that we're not going to see a bear market like we did previously. 2017, we had that all-time high, and then we crashed after that. I don't think we're going to see that. I think right now we're in the accumulation phase. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of backtrack to the CBDCs. I think Dash is positioned in a way where people don't know they need it yet. So when CBDCs and these centralized bank notes get released, they're going to start looking at ways that they can actually transact cryptocurrency, decentralized coins in a similar fashion to those centralized bank notes, basically. people are very reactionary. Like, I know this is a horrible example, but we know before airlines, before 9/11, airlines were completely open. You could walk in and out. They didn't really pat you down. Yeah. TSA wasn't a big thing. And then once 9/11 happened, people and the government reacted to that. So people are very reactionary. So they don't want to get ahead of the curve. They want to, but they don't really look for that. So once something happens like these centralized banknotes and they get released, people are going to react to that. And they're going to look for these coins like Dash and like Monero, like these security coins. I don't want to say security, but privacy-based coins. Mm-hmm. And they're going to look at Dash that they can transact it in and out. They can spend it. And that's when I believe Dash and these coins like Dash are going to get these huge bumps in price, like absolute huge, massive run-ups. And we know, I want to kind of touch, since he brought up Dash Direct, but that's just another, you know, Dash is increasing the utility, I feel like, every day. The Dash Direct, the Dash MasterCard, Thor Chain. And people who are looking for that, like us, and we know what's going on, we are kind of ahead of the curve. So, and these other people, they're not really looking for that. So that's why we don't get these huge bumps in price whenever these new releases come out, because they're amazing and fantastic. But people aren't looking for that yet. And once these centralized banknotes actually get released, and once it's more open, talked about on everyday life, and people are actually realizing what's happening, they're going to look for these decentralized coins that they can transact, these transaction coins. And they're going to look for ways that they can turn these centralized banknotes into a non-KYC MasterCard, like Dash MasterCard. And they're going to look for ways to transition to a decentralized exchange and things like this. So I don't want people to, I guess, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I feel like a lot of people dwell on the Dash price now. And they're thinking, oh, well, you know, Dash is over, whatever. And there's a lot of bearish like sentiment around Dash, I feel like, and people aren't really open to talking about it. And I think that's because the people who are invested already are invested. They know what they own. And the individuals who are going to come and kind of run up the price later on, the mass herd, I want to say, haven't really figured it out yet. And that's where I think why Dash is headed, going to go back to its all-time high. Like I said, not financial advice, but I think it's going to go way past all-time high. I think it's going to go $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a coin. And that's just my personal opinion based on, I mean, history tends to repeat itself. So even we know that Dash can go to $1,600 because it has. I mean, we know that. And I'm not expecting to sell my Dash at $2,000. These are things that I own. This is an anti-DAT asset. So I want to own this, and I don't want to trade it for something else unless I'm actually, you know, going to buy a house or another asset. I want to own Dash for the long haul. So, and I know I own it because it's mine. I own the keys. So it's not like a dollar where they're printing it in the back room. You know, I own what I own. I know how much is in circulation. I know, you know, what I can do and what I can't do with it. And every day, Dash, there's something new you can do with it. So that's just where I stand. I think we're in the early stages of accumulation and utility of more and more institutions, banks, big hedge funds kind of accumulating and learning, creating these new divisions. And I think that within the next 2 or 3 years, like, there's going to be a lot in store for crypto and decentralized exchanges and these kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly true. In, we are definitely a speculative phase, and it's kind of funny you talk about how, like, everyone piles on, like, when they're late already or when it's time. It's kind of funny. It's because it is rational behavior, right? It's just a shorter time preference. And a lot of people, like, most people are not investors, really. Like, they have maybe some investments here and there, but they're not investors. Most people do what makes sense today. And if people didn't do what makes sense today, they would never make it to tomorrow. Like, that's literally how we survive. We find food. We prioritize that now. Otherwise, we starve. It's just the way life works. Now, there are some people that have, like, foresight and can look into the future and take calculated risks on investing in future things. Like, let's just say, you know, you're living in one spot, you're kind of eating, you're doing okay, but, like, I bet there's so much more food and resources, like, 50 miles that way. And so you just get on your horse or whatever, or you walk, you get all the way over there, and you could just have like nothing and be screwed and die. Or you could find a land of plenty, and then all of a sudden, you know, that's kind of like the long-term investment type mindset. And that's kind of what we're all doing now. We're doing things that don't make sense today, honestly. But tomorrow they might. And the thing is, this is, I kind of view the crypto game, it's a combination of innovate as fast as you can and a game of the last man standing. Every new thing that does new things that people want, if you build something new, you're going to get a lot of money out of it, right? Because you got Bitcoin, first new thing. People dumped a bunch of money in. Didn't really have smart contracts. Ethereum came out. All of a sudden, you can do a bunch of stuff. People dump money in. And each new thing, whether it's ICOs, people forget CryptoKitties, which were basically the first NFTs, but like ICOs, DeFi, NFTs, each one of those new dump of money in. And then you have something like, just say, Darkcoin, you know, former Dash Darkcoin, Monero, and then to a certain extent, Zcash that come in, and then people say, oh, this does a new thing. You get money dumped in. So there's that whole, the innovation money dump, but then there's also the last man standing kind of thing where if you don't have privacy, I think you're going to miss out on like pumps. Like we saw like recently after the Coinbase thing, a whole bunch of what could be considered pro-privacy projects got pumped. And then if you like, it's funny because there was this phase when news affected crypto prices. And that phase left. It's gone, kind of. But now it's starting to come back a little bit this year. Where, because I remember in the early days, in early 2017, when I was writing for Cointelegraph, I wrote some article about how Monero was being used on some darknet markets, which is what they were bragging about. But they lost, like, one of the biggest ones, exit scam. It just disappeared and took everyone's money. And within 15 minutes of writing that, like, the Monero price dropped like 10%. It was like you could see the red candle from my article, and I was getting death threats. People were trying to crowdfund like an assassin to come after me. It was crazy shit. And jeez, like it was just, those are the wild crazy days of 2017. And then now it's just like things get 51% attack, no one cares, like no one notices. But right now we're starting to see Coinbase hits, like the Coinbase problem, and then people dump into pro privacy coins. People are starting to see stuff like that. And I think that when people start getting their transactions traced in a more real way, people are going to dump money out of transparent projects, especially like out of like the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and those kinds of things. But even more, once someone figures out that, like once some idiot, like just an idiot robber figures out that if they buy an NFT or they bid on an NFT or whatever, they can see how much money the guy has. And if they just figure out who it is, then people are going to not want any like public NFT chains anymore. They'll just be like, no way, because if I'm moderately successful, people are going to find me and steal my money. That stuff's going to go away. And if you're like, well, we have a, you know, a, like for example, with the upcoming Dash platform, which I hope gets renamed to something cool, when it has NFT functionality, in fact, I think it will have NFT in the last developer sprint this week, I think. They said that it's going to come out with NFT functionality out the gate because identities on the Dash blockchain are NFTs. But they aren't associated with a transaction, like an address. So, for example, if I have a public keys associated with my username, you can't just look at my username and see the address. Like, no, you have to actually send... You have to actually make a connection with me, and then it works. And so in that way, it's the same thing with an NFT. Like I say, I have a username and I have NFTs. I'm going to sell you an NFT. You don't necessarily get to see all the other money I have once you do that. And I think that's going to be hugely valuable, for example. And the ones that don't do that are just going to dump. And then the same thing with, is it actually decentralized? Like what happens when governments start knocking on people's doors? Like, you, let's say Uniswap developers, and they're like, hey, you got to shut the whole thing down or you got to censor these things. They already did that with Uniswap's like front end, I believe. They have certain tokens that aren't listed there because that, even though the back end, if you have a different front end, that works. That'll start getting knocked down. It's like, well, is Thorchain, are there enough or enough devs anonymous to make this work, okay, maybe that pumps up to the sky. And then the next step is, well, what about security? Like, you could, that's the big thing is like, like the Bitcoin forks are really like the actual fork, not just the code base forks, but the fork forks are really easy to attack. Like, I think Bitcoin Cash implemented some sort of weird centralized checkpoint thing. I don't know if they still have that or if that was just the ABC implementation, but that's a different story. But let's just take Bitcoin SV because it did get 51% attacked like a few months ago. And the price almost didn't move at all. Like, no one cared. And the BSV people were saying like, nah, 51% attacks are just in your mind, man. They don't actually exist. I'm just like, are you serious? But you won't be able to do that in the future, where you won't be able to just say that and people are like, yeah, it's fine. Like,
whatever.
Yeah, you're, if you don't have good security, and people are going to figure out that like Dogecoin is not super secure. And Litecoin, oh, yeah. You know, Litecoin, all right. But if someone could throw a few hundred grand for a few days and probably find a way to 51% attack it, maybe. And, or they could just, even with Bitcoin, they could just go to a major mining farm. Maybe not Bitcoin, but let's just say Litecoin. If there's one that has like 40% of the hash rate, they get to like one and then they just like talk to them and then they start 51% attacking. Like, we're going to start seeing these things. Or they contact like the couple of Ethereum whales that are staking and they figure out, okay, you guys control the majority of the stuff, start censoring. Like, that kind of stuff starts hitting, then we're going to start seeing these like big old green and red candles popping up all over the place where like all the shady projects start just getting shaken out that don't have fundamentals. But the problem is, what if you don't remain relevant and in the mindshare long enough for that to take over? Well, then you kind of like don't make it to that stage where you're the last man standing.
Right. Well, I think, yeah, I think the fact that Dash is a hybrid really gives it an advantage over the, over that kind of scenario, worst case scenarios. But I don't have much else to add on that topic. I agree 100% though. Dash being a hybrid, definitely a good solution to most of those problems, in my opinion.
Yeah. Decred's a hybrid too. And then there's things like Horizon, I think, is proof of work only. Like, I don't know if they're the node, the master node, or sorry, secure node, and then I think they have a master node too. I don't think their node system is involved in security, but they do have a weird mining thing because they did get 51% attacked, to where the longer you wait to publish your blocks, because you know, with the 51% attack, you start mining blocks in secret, and then you just, oh, surprise, this is the real chain, and kind of overwhelm that. But basically, the longer it takes to publish the blocks, the more hash power you need. So you can still 51% attack, it just takes longer. And then Digibyte, you have to do like five different algorithms at the same time, or whatever it is. And so it makes it a lot harder.
Right.
Oh, just got rid of a sneeze there. That would have been awkward on this microphone. I need a sneeze button. Oh. But anyway, oh, let's probably wrap this thing up so we don't take up your entire afternoon or whatever. Where could people find your channel and social media and all that cool stuff?
So Twitter, Spades, at Spades Invest. I have a Facebook, but I'm not using it very much. So Twitter and YouTube are the two main things, both at Spades Invest, and that's where I'll be. And I'll be in the Discord chat with Spades is my name. So I appreciate you, Joel. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Everyone, make sure to go follow his channel. He's got some good traction and stuff already on those videos. And yeah, we'll definitely have you back at some point. Everyone else, thanks for watching. Make sure to hit the like button on your way out and leave a little comment. Or wait until the stream's over and leave a comment so it pops up there. And yeah, hopefully back to regular programming next week. But yeah, everyone, thanks for watching, and I will see you around. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on Crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with ShopinBit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.